Namaste, as I bow to you, Professor P here, POSCOM Talks Prevention Science. This is episode 2. Before we get into the interesting fact of the day, I want to let you know that we will be talking about adverse childhood experiences today. That's Vincent Felitti, 1985, 1998. There's a lot of years I guess I could cite and get into, and we'll get more into that. But we're going to be talking about trauma and resiliency. So hopefully those that are listening, you know, if anything's brought up that makes you feel a certain way, please, you can contact me at apyecha@odu.edu, and we can talk about this. Okay, so here we go. Interesting fact of the day. Okay, so today we're going to look at what a generation is. That's right, the term generation. In 2008, the Dean of Continuing Education and Extension at the University of California, Los Angeles, Lady Kathy Sandine, defined the societal label, a generation is a cohort of people born within a particular period of time. By most definitions, each generational interval is approximately 20 years in length. That's right, 20 years in length, approximately. See, 20 years represents the average length of time between birth and childbearing, or the beginning of the next generation. And you find this on page 11 of Continuing Higher Education Review. It's a journal, volume 72, Kathy Sandine, that was 2008. So, for example, if we pretend to play the Ask a Man or a Woman on the Street quiz to name the first generation that comes to their mind. And go. Baby boomers. Ding, ding. Now, that's what I'm talking about. That's a generation, the baby boomers. All right, let's get back out to the man or woman on the street quiz and ask somebody to name as many generations that they can. And go. Okay, baby boomers. Wait, isn't there a loser generation? Generation X. Millennials. Goodness, what about those druggies and the hippies? Wait, isn't there a disco generation? All right. So I would think that if we were out on the street and we were to ask a baby boomer, which a baby boomer is born between the years of 1943 and 1960, they may be able to recall their parents or their grandparents' generations. However, when I personally think of generations, I think of baby boomer, Generation X, and millennial. However, there's more than that. So without further ado, here we go. Now, I'm not going to take us all the way back to the, you know, to the ancient bronze generation or whatever. We're going to start in 1860 to 1882, the missionary generation, 1860, 1882, followed by the lost generation, 1883 to 1900. We have the GI, World War II, aka the greatest generation ever, 1901 to 1924. And I'm not lying. Look, the greatest generation ever. In fact, that's what we're really going to dive into with our interesting fact of the day. So after the greatest generation ever, World War II, 1901 to 1924, we get into the silent generation. I'm watching a movie. 1925 to 1942. Yep, here it comes. Baby boomer generation. 1943 to 1960, followed by Generation X, 1961 to 1981, Millennial Generation, or the Generation Y, that's myself, born 1981 to 1996. We have Generation Z, 1997 to 2011, 2010, roughly. And then lastly, my son, my children, Generation Alpha, born 2010 to 2024, so somewhere in there. Okay. and work with me. I have a little bit of a, I was burning wood yesterday. Burning wood. All right. So I'm pretty jealous though. I mean, the greatest generation ever born. I mean, I'm glad they weren't my parents. They were my grandparents. But the GI, World War II, is considered the greatest generation ever. Born 1901 to 1924. And let's get into here's why. So first, their parents or grandparents tried to quit drinking with the Prohibition Act or the ratification of the 18th Amendment. That was in 1919 and then went into play in 1920. So of course, this made Americans use more drugs. And did you know that rubbing alcohol during 1920 to 1933, right? Rubbing alcohol sales increased 400%. I found this information from CIA, DEA Historical Research, and Musto, 1996. He is an expert in not just alcohol, the history of alcohol, and prohibition, but substance use in general. All right, I'm about to go on a rant, and you guessed it, it's about getting drunk off of rubbing alcohol. So the real alcoholic or addict, whatever that means, will take little tiny swirls of rubbing alcohol, very, very little. Just a little at a time under the tongue and swish it around like mouthwash, and now easy does it swallow. This is called rub-a-dub, and it is suggested that you get kicked out of Skid Row before you enter the stage of alcoholism. Get kicked out of Skid Row before you enter the stage of alcoholism. Rub-a-dub. Usually, train hopping or living in the woods is most practical for this lifestyle. Intoxication is probably close to like PCP rolling, and the withdrawal is something severe. Let alone your mouth, esophagus, and internal organs are burnt, and your liver and brain cells, they don't replenish themselves. Got another quick side note, plural, with this rant. I personally believe alcohol should be a hallucinogen. It's a depressant. Our friends from the British Journal of Psychiatry, 2005, discuss cases of delirium tremens, or DTs. And while nearly all recovered without the development of the graver forms of alcoholic insanity, which we'll get into, the DTs can be fatal. They begin about a day or two after the last drink and can last for a week. Vivid auditory and visual hallucinations commonly characterize these cases. The hallucinations are transient, unless you're a schizophrenic, but in most cases they're transient, which means it's stress-related and it kind of takes on what's going on in your life. However, there is that persecutory role that can come in, like, oh man, they're after me, or everybody knows and they don't think I know, but I know. In the case of subacute alcoholism, auditory, visual, olfactory, and tactile hallucinations are more prolonged persistence of the delusions. For example, Chuck Chamberlain, also known as Chuck C, claimed to have heard symphonies while herds of elephants ran through the streets. Violent shaking probably played a major role, I'm sure, while he was in this state. Also, hallucinations include itchy or burning of the skin and feelings of spiders, some large, even fleas crawling all over you. And actually, humans do have arachnids or mites alive in our pores. Demodex folliculorum, as they referred to, and Demodex doesn't stray too far away from the term dermatology. All right, back to this hallucinating. Sandy Beach actually documented his alcoholic delusional insanity. Sandy was a Marine pilot who would begin withdrawing from alcohol in flight. Goodness, talk about unmanageability. His hallucinations had him witness large building disappear in front of him, and then he believed that he was being interrogated, and this culminated into him trying to get out of the room of interrogation. He opened the door and was running and screaming down the hall because he truly believed he was in the middle of the flight deck with planes taking off and landing. In 1964, this was enough to get Sandy 6 months in the Boo-Boo Hatch. Boo-Boo Hatch is a psych ward or a psychiatric center. And Sandy died with over 50 years clean and sober in AA. And Chuck C., too, died in 1982, 1983 with, you know, over 40 years. All right, so there is an alcoholic silliness which takes on psychosis and then progresses into catatonia and paralysis in some instances, and the alcoholic's brain and liver never recover. Alcoholic insanity is actually a permanent catatonic paralysis state, and the individual cannot do anything, drooling on themselves while their loved ones come to the hospital every day, feed them, change their diapers, until they die. All right, so back to the interesting fact of the day. We're on the greatest generation of all time, the GI World War II generation, born from 1901 to 1920. And while they are the greatest, so yeah, their parents and grandparents the missionary generation, born 1860 to 1882, and the lost generation, born 1883 to 1900, decide to prohibit alcohol and everything goes to hell. Yes, I did say the missionary generation, and I'm pretty sure some of my baby boomers and Generation X thought that that was hilarious because those generations lived through and were born during the sex, drugs, and rock and roll of the 1960s. However, sex and drugs have always been happening, hence the missionary generation. So, the missionary generation, 1860s, 1883, and the lost generation, 1883 to 1900. That would be the parents and grandparents of this greatest generation, the World War II generation. They decide to make alcohol illegal, as well as drugs too, under the Harrison Act, right when the heroes of World War I came back to the homeland. That's pretty messed up. Meanwhile, the greatest generation, 1901 to 1920, they're growing up now in the roaring 20s. And because the missionary generation had only one way to live, their kids were like, well, I mean, look, we're the lost generation, so let's illegally drink, swing dance, late nights at clubs, sex, drugs, and jazz. And it all culminates into the Great Depression of 1929. So, you know, the greatest generation decides, first, they're going to be like, look, we want to get drunk legally. And they do. And Prohibition ends in 1930. All right? Strange, though, alcohol being a depressant, it's not a hallucinogen. Alcohol being a depressant, why would they legalize a depressant during the Great Depression? All right. Anyway, so you know what else the Great Generation does? They elect FDR, baby, who wasn't a polygamist, but he did carry on an affair throughout his entire marriage. Another presidential cheater? Yeah, you know who I'm talking about. Nixon. Oh yeah, he cheated. Before we get back to the generations, I want to have a moment of silence for William Jefferson Clinton. You know, in my courses, and I want to take a break here from this interesting fact of the day, but in my courses with my students, usually the first week of class, we will analyze, compare, and contrast the public speaking skills of two presidents. One, Barack Obama. And I believe that Barack is one of the greatest public speakers ever. He also quit smoking Newport cigarettes while he was president in office. And number two, the infamous Donald Trump. I know you thought I was going to say Ronald Reagan, but I mean, come on, he's an actor. Of course he was great. But no, we look at Barack and we look at Donald. And I do this, you know, Trump is not as smooth as Obama, you know, and he has this accent and whatever, but he plays the bad guy role very well. And there's no denying that he is skilled as a speaker, no matter if you like him as a person or not. Of course, that usually becomes the topic of discussion. The character of Trump is always brought up by my students, who are mostly Generation Z, 1996 to 2010. And their voices are so important. And I believe them. And I believe in them. But it is important to do my job. So I also educate them about the character of our past presidents, about humans in general. And I do this so that, you know, when they go to vote or when they're watching a speech as an audience member, they try to leave their biases behind first. Hear the message, then get, because look, if you have a bias, you can miss the message, right? So, all right, so I try to educate them about the character of our past presidents, who of course have only been white men, except for Obama and William Jefferson Clinton. All right, my shtick is up. I've been making fun of Bill Clinton, and that was probably racist. You know, Bill Clinton is white, and I was trying to compare him to a black American pimp, and that's wrong. The truth about Bill Clinton was this. He was caught having extramarital affairs in the Oval Office and then lied to the American people about his infidelity. And maybe, just maybe, even worse, and this is debatable, but once the truth was revealed, his wife, Senator Hillary Clinton, did nothing while their daughter stood by her side too. Can you imagine how far her inaction subconsciously set us back in the women's suffrage towards equality movement? Shoot, look, I don't think the American people really did anything either, right? So, I mean, the economy was booming. All right, rant over. But back to the economy of the 1930s, in which the greatest generation would start working again, making bullets for World War II. By the way, World War I was the war to end all wars, and World War II was the war to make sure that the sleeping giant, America, would move forward with boots on the ground at all times all over the world since World War II has ended. The greatest generation, and they created and dropped the atomic bomb. They are by far the greatest. Oh, and they smoked cigarettes and drank. And they probably gave birth to the second greatest generation ever, the baby boomers, 1843 to 1960. And again, I know this is also debatable, but you can't deny the music. I mean, and baby boomers are great with money. When I think of baby boomers, I think of my father-in-law. I think of Jerry. You know, they fulfill Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Love, belonging, self-esteem, and self-actualization or desire to become the most one can be to a T. I think this is important for us late Generation X and Millennials because our children, Generation Z and Generation Alpha, will truly go where no man has gone before. And we need to support them just as the boomers did. The baby boomers changed their parenting style for us. Right? Like, it was safe to change your parenting style, to be a little bit more open. And so I'm a big fan of the baby boomers, and I do put them at number two along with the experts. But the number one, the greatest generation of all time, is World War II generation. All right, so there it is, the interesting fact of the day, the generations and their periods. Again, this is an approximation. I'm going to leave it with this. The missionary generation, born 1860 to 1882. The lost generation, 1883 to 1900, the GI greatest generation, World War II, 1901 to 1924, the, I'm trying to watch a movie, silent generation, born 1925 to 1942, the baby boomer generation, born 1943 to 1960, Generation X, 1961 to 1981, millennial generation, Generation Y, born 1981 to 1996, Generation Z, 1997 to 2010, 2011, followed by Generation Alpha, born 2010 to 2024. So now, let's take a look. Adverse Childhood Experiences, also known as ACEs. It's a questionnaire, quizzes that have been adapted and modified since Vincent Felitti's 1985 case study about childhood trauma and obesity, okay? So the ACE questionnaire predicts adverse life outcomes based on exposure to trauma during the first 18 years of childhood. Well, yeah, 17 years and 364 days, all right? Still, the questionnaire relies on the adult recalling events from their past, and too many demographic variable age, predispositions to cognitive disorders, ethnicity, and trauma exposure, previous psychological treatment can factor in the reliability of an ACE score measurement. Okay, and I get that support from Jimenez, 2016. Still, my personal experience would suggest that the higher trauma exposure score, and what the experts see is those who score 4 and above, and it's doses, right? The highest you can get is 10, the lowest is 0. 4 doses and up will come with a greater risk for future social, health, and behavioral outcomes because 4 is the red flag or high risk score. And this is Felitti 98, Felitti 2002, Webster 2022. ACEs have become a real big deal. I got that Vilept. Here we go. So first, before I get into how I was introduced to ACEs again, so Felitti was trying to correlate obesity and childhood trauma, and he did. He found that there was a link. You know, the more trauma that occurred, especially in early childhood, those birth to year 6 led to eating, overeating. Now, again, with obesity, especially in America, you know, we can get into all kind of, you know, genetics aside and this and that, but there was a correlation. And so they felt that, well, hey, wait a second, can't we do this with other things like drug addiction or literacy or depression or everything, the whole gauntlet, And they did. They found, okay, that, you know, the more trauma exposure that occurs, especially early in childhood, there's a greater likelihood of negative future life outcomes, chronic health disorders. So my introduction to ACEs came when I was 34 years old. That's 7 years ago. Married to a wonderful, loving wife. And I found myself doing a 5-week outpatient treatment. And I was watching this documentary about Felides ACEs. The documentary is called Healing Neen. That's healing, one word, and then neen. N-E-A-N. I suggest you check it out. So neen is Tonir Kane. Tonir, or Neen, was born and raised in the projects of Baltimore and Annapolis. And so instantly, being from Baltimore City myself, I identified with her. Felidi appears in the film, but most importantly, Tonir. It's her life. And Tonir lived through horrendous trauma. I mean, look, one time cops were called because Tonir was being gang raped. And she's the one who gets arrested. So I suggest you take a look at it, all right? Healing Neen. I mean, she's overcome, you know, the adversity that she went through. You know, she was 8 years old. Her mom was prostituting her. I mean, she scores a 10 out of 10 on Felides ACE questionnaire, which is probably less than 1% of the population scores a 10 out of 10 on Felides questionnaire. And I was so moved that I actually reached out to Tonir, whose testimony to sobriety and freedom, it's just truly a miracle. And I was grateful. I got to have some one-on-ones with Tonir, and her coalition continues to bring the message of hope to so many, especially incarcerated women, especially incarcerated Black women. So you can go to www.tonircane, that's T-O-N-I-E-R-C-A-I-N, tonircane.com. So what is the ACEs questionnaire? All right, I have 10 questions for you. Okay, and this is the time where if you feel sensitive or something triggers, you know, you can write it down, remember it, and please, you can email me at apyecha@odu.com, odu.edu, apyecha@odu.edu. All right, so here it is. There's 10 questions. If you say yes, you get 1 point. If you say no, you get 0. At the end of the questionnaire, you will have either 0 or 10. The higher the number, the more trauma, doses, or exposure you experienced. These questions relate to everything up to the age of 18. So as a child, here we go. Number 1, do you feel that you didn't have enough to eat, had to wear dirty clothes, or had no one to protect or take care of you? 2, did you lose a parent through divorce, abandonment, death, or other reason? Did you lose a parent? Not both, just one. Number 3, did you live with anyone who was depressed, mentally ill, or attempted suicide? Number 4, did you live with anyone who had a problem with drinking or using drugs, including prescription drugs? Number 5, did your parents or adults in your home ever hit, punch, beat, or threaten to harm each other? Number 6, did you live with anyone who went to jail or prison? Number 7, did a parent or child in your home ever swear at you, insult you, or put you down? 8, did a parent or adult in your home ever hit, beat, kick, or physically hurt you in any way? Number 9, did you feel that no one in your family loved you or thought you were special? And number 10, did you experience unwanted sexual contact, such as fondling or oral, anal, vaginal intercourse penetration? All right. So what the experts have found is that, I mean, look, trauma in any dose, right? I mean, it's part of humanity, and we go through adversities. Some of us are able to, you know, especially if we have the right support, are able to be more resilient than others. They have found that once you start getting into the 2, the 3, especially the 4 number, that your likelihood to experience chronic disease as you know, everything from anxiety to alcoholism to cardio, and we go back to Felides' original, obesity, how we eat. So 4 seems to be the magic number in that we need an intervention. And the problem is that those that are in jail right now or in trouble, it's like, what can we do, right? You know, their life is, in many cases, already gone down a certain road. You know, we can't just give the ACEs test in our schools, right? I mean, we can't read those 10 questions to children. Children don't understand. You know, we can do like a reverse positive ACEs test, and there is a benevolent childhood experiences, right? And they're doing studies. Can, you know, positive experience help with that resiliency and comprehension, accepting and getting through trauma? So, you know, I am a child of, you know, alcoholic, drug addict parents. And I was born in Baltimore City. You know, I spent my early childhood years with my mother, who battled mental illness, domestic abuse, addiction. My birth father and my mother were divorced when I was young. He was in and out of prison, running from the law. You know, my mother was beaten up a lot. I spent my pre-K years in dive bars, exposed to pornography and sex. One of my mother's boyfriends kidnapped me. I'm at a McDonald's when I was like 5. It was just like, geez. I drank my first Zima beer with my mother, and there was people partying. I was 5. You know, eventually my mother moved us with my grandparents before elementary school, and there were some significant moments in my adolescence. However, in my experience, you know, those early years of trauma, that disease of alcoholism, addiction, and PTSD, right? If that's not treated daily, it will continue to progress and resurface in my experience. And, you know, my mother too, right? And by the time I was a teenager, I was a full-blown opiate addict, you know, and I could start adding to my ACE scores. And the story of the porn is that I score 7 out of 10 before starting first grade. And I don't score a 10 like Tonier. I mean, you know, and it's like I try to remember, especially today with, you know, my perspective, how great my life has become. You know, but, you know, my personal experience led to my ACE score. And I have been influenced, you know, by Tonier's score, you know, to investigate ACEs. And so I did, right? And so, look, did my ACE score at age 6, right, scoring a 7, predict my future life outcomes? You know, and ACEs are not. My life experience is mine. You know, trauma, adversity, and resiliency, they're natural phenomena associated with humanity. Yeah, it's Ellis and Dietz, 2017. And that gets into adverse community experiences, adverse climate experiences, and atrocious cultural experiences, right? So ACEs, that there's the pair of ACEs, right, for the individual and then the community. I mean, it makes sense, right, that those that are going to live in poverty, those with lower socioeconomic status, they're probably going to experience, you know, more trauma. Well, there's more trauma in the community. And we'll talk about climate experiences, right? Like, you know, my mother-in-law was in Haiti during the earthquake, right? These things, that is an adverse climate experience, an earthquake. You know, can you imagine? And then now you're in a different culture, atrocious cultural experience, right? However, I do believe having trauma exposure score of 7 in my early childhood does correlate with Felitti's 1998 theories about chronic disorders, depression, substance abuse, as likely future outcomes for those children who score 4 and above. Specifically, in 2004, Felitti had reported that, and here's what he said, I quote, "A male child with an A score of 6, when compared to a male child with an A score of 0, has a 46-fold, 4,600% increase in the likelihood of becoming an injection drug user sometime later in life." And this was shocking to me because I experienced this behavior in late adolescence. And this was even after positive experiences during middle school in my childhood, those ages 6 to 12. My score was a 7, and I was injecting cocaine with my family living across from a recovery center, right across from the street of a recovery center, injecting cocaine. You know, basically, if you had known me and a group of young boys, and we were around the age of 6, and you knew about our trauma exposure, you could have read Felitti's 2004 report and placed $1,000 bet on the odds of, you know, 46%, 4,600%, 46 to 1. You would have won $46,000. So it resonated with me. Look, today things are obviously different, okay? And you heard on the last episode about my late adolescence, right, in my childhood. And today I get to recover from my past every day. And just like Tony Erkane, you know, so again, please check out Healing Neen at or TonyErkane.com. But trauma is complex, and everyone experiences trauma differently. Again, I was talking about my mother-in-law, Jody Jackson Tucker. You can look her up too. That's JodyJacksonTucker.com, and it's Jody with an I, not a Y. And you know, she gave me this book, right, to read during one of our holiday visits about the orphanage system in America. And it was just riveting, and you know, it left me feeling so hollow. I say this because, you know, one of my close friends who owns Get Stuffed Food Truck, Eric, you know, please visit his site at getstuffed62.com. That's GETSTUFFED62.com. You know, he was adopted without the birth parents' reality. In fact, he and three other adult acquaintances of mine do not know their birth parents. Now, Eric will be real quick to tell you, you know, who his parents are and were, right? And, you know, he's loved his life, and he'll tell you his life has been great. But there's trauma there, you know? There is trauma in that earth that we can't even touch as experts, right? We can't even go there. Most Americans can never understand or relate to that. In fact, ACEs has been adapted many times over. And one dose of trauma exposure is usually correlated with one of the natural parents not being in the picture. So I would say, isn't it practical then if an individual were to take an ACEs that didn't have both birth parents, you know, adopted at birth or during early childhood, shouldn't they score a 2? But, you know, I love you, Eric. But back to Jody and my father-in-law, Jerry, you know, they adopted children from Uganda 15 years ago. We cannot even begin to explore the trauma my brothers and sisters endured. And shoot, Jody was there during the Haiti earthquake. I told you that, you know, and that takes me also to like times of war and, you know, what our soldiers go through. Natural disasters occurring all over the world. You know, my close friend Priscilla had shared with me that, you know, during her childhood, her house burned down. Like, imagine your home burning down. Or, you know, a fatal and physically life-altering accident, you know, and these things happen, you know, and Eric too, Eric had cancer, right? Like, these things happen. So by no means am I saying that, like, you know, the ACEs, the trauma, this is the only way. But when we're starting to look at early childhood, it's not impossible to think or even believe that the natural homeostasis, right, of the neurology of the brain has been compromised, right, when you're that young. So, look, the risk factor is what then? Well, yeah, socioeconomic status, right? Race, culture, religion, drugs, and poverty. But most importantly, when it comes to trauma, it is the who, the people, the family, the friends, and the community that is with you during these traumatic events. Afterward, the whole human phenomena of resiliency. You know, in my example in Tonier's, it's never God's fault, but rather the experience God does not want to take away from us. You know, there was a lack of protective factors in place during and after the trauma. The best preventive measures are for those generations I mentioned, when moms and dads, the community and the friends and the family are there after something occurs. That's when the intervention starts. You know, ACEs are essential across all stages of childhood psychosocial developmental theories. And it would behoove further research into middle childhood and adolescence to initiate upscaling of current prevention evidence-based programs. It is important to remember that adolescence could be considered physiological insanity, with more complex layers like social factors, peers, education, technology, and media on top of trauma, right? On top of trauma. Now, the development of the brain, you know, the growth, the pace during that infant, toddler, and early childhood phase, we know it's a critical time for opportunity because of the vulnerability, you know, especially when it comes to positive or negative reinforcement. And there's lifelong implications. And that's our boy Jimenez, 2016, page 2. And Webster, 2022, supports this too. Continued ACE focus during this infant, toddler, early childhood phase, because there's still relatively little known about the prevalence and impact of ACE exposure in early childhood. Limited information about traumatic exposures taking place in the critical birth to age 5 human development period, although ACEs in early childhood have been linked to adverse community experiences and poor physical health outcomes, little is known regarding associations between early childhood ACEs and developmental and behavior outcomes. And that's page 2. That was Jimenez, 2016. I mean, yeah, okay, but maybe not exact outcomes, but we know that the earlier that trauma occurs, the more likely that the brain's chemistry and rewiring is changing. Focusing more on the impact of ACE exposure before middle childhood may prove more reliable behavior and health outcomes predictability and increased knowledge on practical interventions with positive resilience, resolve, and recovery. Webster agrees that understanding the prevalence of ACEs and the risks associated with ACEs in early childhood is critical for creating interventions that promote positive development for youth and inform parental education to minimize future ACE exposure. The earlier the trauma occurs, the more likely events have to change the hardwiring in the brain dramatically. Preventive measures are implemented. It can be a long road. Hopefully, with amazing friends like Eric and Priscilla and wonderful parents like Jody and Jerry, acceptance and understanding can take place in the person's life. That's resiliency. While some of us may seem to have a natural ability to bounce back from adversities, the reality is it's only by resources, support, and a connection to a loving and caring God, because after all, what else really matters? Okay. Before Dr. Tansy Vandekar Burden joins us on March 31st, there will be another episode next week, and a guest will be joining us. For all the great dad jokes out there, thanks for namasteing, but namago. Thank you.